So yeah, people talk about 80-20, multifamily deals, operators good, markets good, but one thing can change in the investment structure. So let's say they said 80-20 is not based on profit, it's based on whatever equity I'm going to split 20% on day one, right? So you can always structure your paperwork to say that 80-20 is actually, it's a fee that you're paying to us.
What's going on, guys? This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will help you escape the Wall Street casino and build wealth by investing on Main Street, investing in real estate. Today, our guest is James Kandasamy, and today we're talking about risk in syndicated multifamily deals and really getting into the details, things that James noticed. He is a multifamily syndicator, but he noticed this after and while writing his book for passive commercial real estate investors and noticing where the risks were in especially other syndicators' deals. And he kind of restructured the way he thinks about risks and priorities that folks should look at when evaluating syndicated multifamily deals. And if you don't know what all that means, don't worry. We're going to get into it. He's going to break it all down for you and talk about risks that you may not notice or identify in deals that you evaluate until you listen to this interview, and you're going to understand a little bit better about how maybe some syndicators are hiding risks in their deals or structuring deals in a certain way that puts more risk on the passive investor if things kind of go upside down. And we're going to get into all that. It's a little complicated, but he really does a great job of breaking it down for us and making sure we understand how we can understand these risks, how we can, when we're looking at deals, how we can make sure we're protected or understand whether or not we're exposed to these risks in particular. So really interesting conversation. James was so helpful in this conversation, and he and I had a conversation before and after recording this interview, and he was just so helpful. So I certainly appreciate his time both for this interview and personally. He provided a lot of great information for me. So shout out to James. Appreciate it so much. If you're new to the show and you're an Apple Podcast user and you haven't yet, please take a quick second. Leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars would be so much appreciated. That helps other people learn about the show. That helps us rank higher in the Apple Podcast ecosystem. And I'm always honest with you guys, that gives me the warm and fuzzies because I get to see that you're engaging with the content and you're escaping that Wall Street casino along with us. No matter what podcast app you use, if you do enjoy the show, take a second, look us up, hit that subscribe button. That way you'll get every new episode straight to your mobile device every month. And what you do and who you are, can you tell us a bit about your business? And then we'll dive
into Sure. James, my name is James Kandasamy, based out of Austin, Texas. We buy in Austin, San Antonio, and all over Texas. Currently, we own like almost 2,000 units, Class B and C. And we are single GP, investments with all our 2,000 units. I mean, of course, we and our passive investors, but we are the single GP. And we have raised almost $50 million until now. Our assets are almost $220 million in total value. All that doesn't matter, right? At the end of the day, you have to buy it really, really cheap, right? Doesn't mean if you own $1 billion, you probably bought very expensive stuff, right? So compared to a guy who owns $100 million, he bought really, really cheap stuff and got a lot of upside, right? So the AUM doesn't really matter, but I just want to mention that so at least people know where we are in terms of assets. We focus a lot on value add deals. And also I'm also the author of Passive Investing in Commercial Real Estate, the best-selling book in Amazon and international as well.
Great. Awesome. And, you know, it's very impressive, what you say you've done. I just want to point that out, that this is you've done these deals as a single GP rather than, you know, a team of a number of general partners who share a number of roles. You maybe have some folks in there who are, you know, dubiously just raising money in those deals, but that's not what you're doing. You're doing it all on your own, which is pretty, you know, uncommon/unique out there. Mm-hmm. Today.
Yeah, and also if I forgot to mention, we're also vertically integrated. So we have our own property management, asset management, construction ourselves, and I didn't realize it is unique until later when I talked to people, and it's just how we started and how we continued, and we were able to raise the money ourselves through our investors. We were able to find the deals ourselves. We were able to do asset management and also property management all throughout ourselves. And we have like 45 people working for us right now because of our property management company. We have like almost 8 people on the corporate level.
Nice. So before we were recording, you were telling me about ways in which you see folks doing deals today, structuring deals, things like that, that put more risk on investors than the investors may realize. And I wanted to see if we could, you know, talk more about that, what you see out there, what your concerns are about how, you know, others are structuring some deals that make things a little more risky for their passive investors.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very, I mean, this podcast and what you're doing is very, very good for your listeners and for your investors as well, because I think everybody need to be educated by, you know, by anyone, all your guests coming in adding value, right? So, but let me go into why I think, you know, investment structures are very key, right? So, so I used to always talk about, you know, what are the top three things? And everybody talks about your top three things in any investment. First is operator. Second is, you know, deal. Third is the market, or maybe second is the market. Third is the deal. Doesn't matter, right? But, you know, after I wrote my book, when I start talking to people, I mean, my book is introduction to passive investing. I wrote it to make sure that people are able to get introduced to how to invest passively, because there's a lot of groups out there charging $20,000 to $30,000 just to know what I have in my book for $20 in Amazon, right? A lot of people just want to be handhold, and I mean, they want someone to hold their hand and show them the rope rather than reading a book. That's okay if that's your choice. So after I wrote my book, I talked to people and I started realizing, how are these people growing so quickly? There are some people grow very, very quickly and they buy thousands in unit with 3-4 years. And I always wonder. So then I realized, they do partnership. That's okay. Partnerships is absolutely a good thing. And I, at some point, I probably will do partnership as well. I'm looking at that right now. However, as I said, always people talk about operator, deals, and market, right? As the top three things that everybody need to look at. But I've changed my philosophy on that. It's no more the operator, deals, and market. It's actually operator. The second one's investment structure that you're signing up to. And the third one can be deal or market, doesn't matter, right? So the investment structure is what is hidden in your paperwork that you are writing, that you're signing on. As a passive investor, there's a lot of things can be done on the way it's being structured, right? Do you have a pref return? Do you have a profit split between people? People talk about, we do 80-20 profit split, right? I'm sure you have heard about it, right? 80-20, we do 80-20. Sounds really good.
Yeah.
This operator is only taking 20%, right? And then there's another guy who come and say, I'm only doing 90-10. I'm only taking 10%, right? But that's a lot of manipulation behind that numbers, right? Manipulation, I don't know whether I should say manipulation. I would say the way it's being represented is completely wrong, right? And let me give you some example on that. So I know you're curious about that, because I'm sure a lot of a lot of passive investors are curious. Hey, what is James talking about, right? And I've heard about all this, right? So let me talk about 80-20 profit split, right? That can be branched into three different risk level, right? And we always talk about multifamily is a low risk investment, highly resilient in any economy, right? But if you go into these three branches of this 80-20 profit split, it can go into the lowest risk to the highest risk, right? And lowest risk is basically you treat it as an original investment. So for example, on a CD, right? When you go to a bank, let's say you put 100,000, right, on a bank. And when I say the CD, the bank say, I'm going to give you 10% CD. For example, right, there's no 10% nowadays. It's all less than 1% nowadays. For example, 10%, right? So the bank say, I'm going to give you 10% CD, right? So the 100,000 stays as it is, you get 10% profit on top of the 100,000, correct?
In theory.
So the risk is pretty low because you know your capital is being preserved, right? So so the lowest risk is basically 80-20 when your capital is always being preserved as it is. The 20, whatever profit that is being given out of the distribution on a monthly or quarterly basis is actually profit, right? So your capital is always intact. So you're getting profit. So let's say when I said 80-20, year one, I'm going to give 10% cash on cash return, right? My assumption has always been, or my capital is intact, I'm giving 10% more on top of that, right? So it's actually interest on your money. So that's low risk investment, right? Because your capital is always intact, you're making money 10%. So let me go to the middle ground, right? So So from low risk, that's a low risk investment. Now make, let's make it into high risk investment, 80-20 as well, right? So 80-20 high risk investment, right? For example, when you said 80-20, when you said I'm giving you 10% payout, I'm not giving you cash on cash, I'm giving you payout. What does that payout mean, right? So let's say your investment is your cash flow from the property is getting 10%, right? So I'm giving you 10% from the property, but I've changed the investment structure that 10% I'm giving you is not profit. I'm giving you capital. So now your capital is no more intact. Your capital is being diluted as you move along, mm-hmm. right? You're still getting 10%. It is still 80-20, but the investment structure have changed, right? Rather than giving you as a profit, they are giving you as a capital, right? So what does that mean for next 5 years? You're getting 10%, 10%, 10% for next 5 years. But if you're getting back capital, you're basically making zero money.
So drawing down a capital account.
Yeah, you're drawing down a capital account. So basically, it's an investment, high risk investment, right? Because first of all, for next 5 years, you didn't make any money, right? Mm-hmm. And all the eggs is put into one basket, which is at the sale. At the sale, we hope you're going to make some money and I'm going to give you some return. So basically, your entire risk is put into the end when the exit cap rate. And this is what happened in commercial real estate. Commercial real estate talks about risk methodology, and they always said cash flow, a true cash flow is always low risk compared to exit cash. Because no one knows what's going to happen in the next 5 years.
True.
Right? So that's, they say that's very high risk metrics. The exit cap rate is always very high risk metrics. Cash flow is low risk metrics. But when they have changed this kind of investment structure to only pay you your profit, your true profit at the end, it basically they made their entire investment as high risk. Because can you see how the whole multifamily low risk 80-20 become from low risk to high risk just by one word in your PPM?
So it's like you're saying that, so if it's just based on cash flow, it's the literal operation of the property and how the business is performing. But if it's this structure where it's, you know, paying 10% capital back, it's not based on the actual performance, and you're kind of betting on lower cap rates down the road, or at least.
Yeah. I mean, if someone is paying me back my capital, I've not made any money yet. Mm-hmm. Right, I've not made any money yet. It's just my capital. So what? Yeah, it looks good. I'm getting 10% every quarter or every year. Looks good, babe. But on paper, it's actually the sponsor will say that today the world ends. We have to sell the deal, right? The cap rate, exit cap rate, and entry cap rate is the same. You didn't make any money, right?
So because, mm-hmm. You mentioned changing one word in the PPM. Mm-hmm. What is that word? I just want to make
it's
sure.
It's on and off. So the PPM will say that return on capital, which is a profit, mm-hmm. okay. which is a low risk, versus return off capital.
Yeah.
So on and off. That's just one word, right? So investment structure change, right? So can you see how it went from one spectrum of low risk of 80-20 multifamily investment to a very high risk? And multifamily is still low risk. The market's still low risk. The deal is still low risk. The market's low risk. But that's one word change has changed your entire investment structure, right? So... make sense?
I believe so. I think I understand. But I think the next step is, mm-hmm. you know, we always want our investors to understand the risks and be able to assess the risks for themselves, you know, whether it's low or high based on their own perception. And I feel like some of the implication here is, you know, changing one word in the PPM, it's kind of like the fine print in a way. You mm-hmm. know, do investors in these situations really understand the difference, or is it adequately disclosed?
Well, everything in PPM is disclosed, right? When I give you a PPM, you're supposed to read and understand and do it. But, you know, I can bet you, you know, a lot of investors don't really understand the legal jumbo mumbo written on that PPM, right? People are, there's so much of FOMO happening, fear of missing out. People just want to sign and get into the deal. Right, people don't really look at investment structure, and sometimes it happens in a large scale, like this kind of, you know, high risk investment happen in a large scale. They don't really care so much, but they say everybody's the same, right? So I'm just going to follow the same. Or maybe they say, oh, we are in a group. Especially all this happens when you're in a group, because everybody thinks the same, right? Or everybody don't understand they don't understand the same. They understand the same. They also don't understand the same thing, right? So it's like the knowledge, the herd mentality, right? Everybody knows the same knowledge, right? So only when they go out of the group, then they realize, oh, actually, we have been doing all wrong all the way, right? Right. And as I said, all this won't be exposed for the past 11 years. Market has been booming. People will make money in some way, even though it's return of capital, because the exit cap rate has been compressing all the time. But that's not the case all the time, right? In real estate, right?
Yeah, right. It can't go down forever. It's not going to go to zero.
Yeah. And let me tell you another high risk 80-20 profit split investment, right? So yeah, people talk about 80-20 multifamily deals, operators good, market's good, but one thing can change in the investment structure. So let's say they said 80-20 is not based on profit. It's based on whatever equity I'm going to split 20% on day one. Right? So you can always structure your paperwork to say that 80-20 is actually, it's a fee that you're paying to us, 20%. It's 80-20, right? Mm-hmm. So that means that today I buy on a deal of 400,000. Let's say I buy an asset for 100,000. And tomorrow I sell, the passive investor already lost 20,000.
It's like driving a car off the lot.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. So
that's not a kind analogy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just saying that it's a they call it retained earnings. So I don't know. There's few words that all this exists in the SEC world, or you know, the way attorneys structure the deal. I mean, but based on whatever the operator is asking them to do, right? But that's a big high risk investment too, right? Basically, you're paying a fee of 20% on day one to the sponsor, whether he makes money or not, right? It doesn't matter. Right. So usually it's all based on profit. Right. So that's another way that, you know, investment structures are being created nowadays. Right. And as I tell you, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your investors are shaking their head too. I didn't know that. I'm going to go back and check my company agreement. Right. And my advice to them is just go and read very carefully. How does the operational cash flow is being distributed? A lot of times people talk about, capital event. Yeah. Capital event refinance and, sale is very clear, right? But how is the capital, how is the operational distribution is being distributed, right? So these are things in the profit split. There's a lot of other things as well. Like sometimes people, you know, pay, you know, day one, they pay like, you know, a big pref return on a value add deal. And it's very, very hard to really make money like 8% or 7% on day one on a pref return on a value add deal, because there's nothing exists like that. The institution will come and grab it. They say, I'm going to pay 6%. I don't mind taking maybe a 4% cash on cash. I'm going to buy that, right? And the way they do it, they just overraise the money and pay it out of another escrow account, right? Not really from the property, right? And that is not really an investment in real estate. That's investment into some virtual account, right? So there's two money paying. One is from virtual account being paid, and there's another. I mean, while they stabilize the real estate, they pay money from virtual account. I mean, I don't know whether that's valid to do or not, but that's another way that investment structure can be changed to, you know, please investors. Right. And in that case, I don't think so. It's even written in the PPM. I don't know how are they doing it, because it's not really written on the PPM. PPM do allow for, you know, money of capital calls to be paid out early. Like if you have too much capital money, then you can pay the investors out early. I think that's the loophole people use, right? They say, we're going to overraise money for capital and we're just going to keep on paying back. It's like, overraise and payback, we overraise the capital, but which is not true, right? Everybody knows that, because they do it in all the deals.
So I do wonder, that does bring up a good point, is like, how can an investor tell if they're going into a deal that has that as part of the... Are you investing in real estate passively, but don't know what red flags to look for? Well, we've got the answer for you, a free 7-day video course on red flags in passive real estate investing that you can get right now by going to passiverealestatecourse.com. 7 days, 7 videos, 7 red flags in passive real estate investing. Check it out, passiverealestatecourse.com. Now back to the show. Set up.
I don't know whether they can tell or not. The best way to know it, I mean, because I invested in one LP investment and I was getting 8% from day one, and I can never figure it out. And later, okay, because I'm a CCIM, right? I'm going to go look at the financials, and I start reading the financials. Take the income minus expense, you get NOI. NOI minus mortgage, you get the total cash flow. Mm-hmm. And I counted the cash flow versus how much money we put in. We are getting 4% cash flow. And how are these people paying 8%? And they've been paying for past, and they're behind by 30% of their original projection from what was presented in the beginning. So they're behind by 20%. The NOI is behind by 20%. They're paying full pref, right? And when I counted this, I'm not getting the full pref. So where else are they going to get the money, right? So, and later I realized by talking to people, actually, there are groups out there that create a separate, you know, account to pay out investors. And I looked at my PPM. I don't see any provision that allow them to do that. Right? So it's, I think investors out there really need to understand who are they investing with and really need to know investment structure in detail, which not many people teach us that, right? I mean, when I talk to you, I said investment structure, it looks very standard, right? People talk about waterfall structure, people talk about profit split, but there's so many nuances behind all that on how the money is being paid out, how the risk is being changed, right? I mean, for me, it's all about risk because that's what we're investing, right? Yeah, we know real estate's good. It has been going up, but what is the risk? Real estate do go in a cycle, right? There's no such thing as going to keep on going forever, right?
And there's no such thing as like crash proof or risk-free or anything like that. But I, you know, and when you said this before we started recording, my mind first went to like financing debt. What's the, you know, are you talking about the risk of, you know, over leveraging, something like that? But there's a little more, there's a little more nuance there. And I want to make sure we cover, or at least I ask. So in your opinion, what is a way to structure a deal to mitigate some of these risks, or what do you think like the right way is to do this deal structure?
Deal structure, I mean, just make sure that investors are being really taken care of. Make sure that you give the lowest risk to them, not give them the highest risk and don't tell them. I mean, and the way to do it is just make sure your cash flow that's giving to them is actually pure profit, right? Because that's the risk that they, I mean, in case the deal doesn't do well, at least they had some cash flow that they made some profit out of it, right? The worst thing when you don't give them cash flow, you're putting all your eggs in one basket at the sale, right? But that's very high risk proposition. And as I said, for the past 11 years, everything has been going very well. So no issues there, but it doesn't go very well all the time, right? So just make sure it's profit and make sure that you explain to them, you educate your investors how it's being structured, right? Like for example, I did a small deal recently, like just a $1 million raise. It's just for a small raise. And I structured it as a debt, right? But most of my investors doesn't know that we are structuring as a debt, even though I clearly mentioned on my email and all that. But once I got a commitment, I got like 6 times more commitment for that $1 million. And I resent a mail to all my investors. Hey, make sure you know this is not equity investment. This is more like a loan type of investment. Make sure you all are aware. So I double communicate with them on an email, right? And some people dropped out. That's okay. But I just want to make sure that people understand what are they investing in, right? And that's key, right? Rather than just taking their money and, you know, hopefully you're going to make profit for them. Because I think deals can go good or bad, right? But key thing is everybody to understand what they have invested in.
Absolutely. I mean, we do have a lot of passive listeners or passive investors who listen to the show. And you know, I appreciate your answer. Certainly, I feel like it's from the sponsor's perspective, which we both sit in that chair, is here's how we adequately disclose, which is certainly very important. I wonder what do you think for the passive investor who's looking at these deals and wants to say, well, shoot, I want to know how to protect myself or at least make sure I really understand the deal structure and if it's set up for my success or if they're kind of hiding something. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that? Is it ultimately going in and doing that math like you described, looking at NOI minus debt service and what's the cash flow versus what's the pref and, you know, what's that all look like? What do you think?
That would be the best way, you know, post-investment, right? You already invested in that person, right? I mean, you can go and audit your investment and see, you know, are they really making pref to see that pref return, right? But that is not visible on other structures, right? Like 80-20, you know, you have to really go and understand what have you signed up for in your PPM and your company agreement, right? And every time I talk to a lot of advanced investors, when I talk to them, when I explain to them this, they got a shock. And when they go back and check and they look at their 10 investment and they say, oh, this is right. But 80% is if it's not right, right? So now they realize, okay, so one guy is doing it correctly. There's another, you know, six guys not doing correctly. So at least now they know. right? But only when you explain in detail on how to look for all this, like whatever I've already explained, I'm sure a lot of people are going to go back and see their investments. They're going to realize, right? But as I said, 80 to 90% of the deals out there on a, I would call it as independent syndicators or independent sponsors, they do it correctly because that's the right way to do. But there are some groups out there, you know, where they have that. I don't know how it become more common in that groups. They have done it completely different from the normal investment, what you call philosophy, right? But as I said, it's not, I don't know whether it's legal or not legal. I'm not a lawyer, but you know, it's all written on the PPM. And if you sign it, you signed up for it, right? So the best thing to do is just learn the investment structure. And I don't want to sound salesy. I mean, I do have a small video course on this where I teach the detailed investment structure on how to see it, how to see, you know, how to go and identify how each person has written their PPM, right? So that's going to be in passiveinvestinginrealestate.com website.
That is a solid URL. That definitely, that must have been tough to get. I would
assume. Yeah. Passiveinvestinginrealestate.com. Yeah. Nice. I have my book there. And after that, there's a course, a video course, which explains investment structures.
Nice. Well, great. I love all of it so far. And right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor. Have you ever wanted to invest in the private lending and debt side of real estate? You might find that going out and finding borrowers on your own is tough. When you find a borrower, you have the task of evaluating their plan all on your own. And the traditional way of lending private money highly concentrates your risk because you'll probably be funding the whole rehab loan on your own. That meant writing loan checks well into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, placing a lot of risk in individual borrowers and properties. Not to mention, there's a lot for you to know in terms of how to structure these loans so that you can help protect yourself and work with the borrower in your interests. Now, there's a new way to invest in the debt side of real estate that turns the private money lending space on its head. You can invest in a variety of debt instruments with this new platform with as little as $10 in each opportunity. You can diversify your investment across a wide variety of borrowers, geographies, and asset types. This new platform is called Ground Floor. They make it easy to invest in either your name or using your self-directed IRA. And if you don't already have a self-directed IRA, don't worry. They make it easy to get started and get one opened. Go to www.passivewealthstrategy.com/groundfloor to get started or click the link in the show notes. See the Ground Floor site for full terms and details of what they offer. Once again, that's www.passivewealthstrategy.com/groundfloor or click the link in the show notes. Back to the show. All right, James, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Great. First one, what is the best investment you ever made other than in your education?
Best, other than education is always the best, right?
So that's why that answer is not on there. That's why we take that one off.
Are you talking about like real estate investments?
I mean, honestly, whatever you like. I love hearing a deal story if you got one. Kind of a little bit open-ended other than...
Okay. Yeah, deal story. Absolutely. Yeah. Our second deal, in fact, the first two deals was the best investment, right? So we made like almost, I mean, the first deal, we made like 330% in 4 years, 50% IRR. The second deal, we still have it. We refinanced 100% in 1 year, right? We put in $6 million. We took out $6 million in 12 months. And the building is free, right? where can you get, you know, walk around and say, this building is free, you know, all me and my investors own it, right? Kind of thing. Even the third investment also, we took out like almost 80% in, not in 12 months, but we did in 15 months, which is still an awesome investment, right? 80% capital returned back. Yeah, these are the few deals that we do. And we have like 10 deals right now, and a lot of it is going to be really good deals. The last deal we did in, 6 months ago was an awesome investment as well. We put it under contract in 3 days. You know, today broker called me, tomorrow I drove, the third day we put it under contract. We got it almost at 30% discount on that deal.
Wow.
And you know, where do you hear people getting discounts on deals nowadays, right? you always end up overpaying because of you going through this bidding war. But that was a really good deal. I mean, we're still stabilizing the deal, but we are it was negative cash flowing 400,000 6 months ago. Now it's like positive cash flowing at least 200,000, right? So that's really good, right? In 6 months, we turn around from, you know, negative $500,000 to positive. And part of it is because we are really good operators. You know, we are specialized in turning around difficult deals. I know a lot of people nowadays are buying class A's and, you know, all the nicer properties. It's cash flows. But, you know, we are really, really good at buying the difficult deals and turning it around, because that's where you make the most money, right? We and also the investors.
Well, I like that you've got from the outside looking in, looks like you have a very tight geographical area where you do deals, which is can give you a major advantage over folks coming in from out of town trying to do deals.
Absolutely. There. Absolutely. Yeah. We focus a lot in Austin and San Antonio, and that, I mean, a lot of our deals are here, primarily in San Antonio, but a lot of it is there. And we built all our infrastructure, our property management, our construction, all that, you know, nearby, so that we can turn around quickly. And that's the one way to really make a difference in this hot market, right? I mean, if you start buying everywhere, if I go to Atlanta, I'm just an outsider, right? Which means I'll get probably the worst deals out there if I do my first deals, right? It's good to focus on one geography.
Yeah, and you can get there in the next day, and then get a place under contract and get yourself a discount. So there's many advantages to being there.
That's a very, very rare deal. I don't want to say all that deals are the same, right? But that's a very rare deal where we got it. We bought it at a really good price and a really good market on a really good submarket as well.
Nice. So we had the best investment or best investments. Now we go to the other side of that coin, the worst investment. What is the worst investment you ever made?
The worst is when I started, where, you know, in single family, I didn't have any mentors, no education at all. I thought, you know, I'm an engineer. I know all numbers. This is simple, right? I mean, how difficult is it going to be? I made the wrong calculation of appraisal value of my deal. And I mean, I didn't end up closing on that house, but I lost my earnest money, like $3,000. So, but I thought the ego that I had at that time without being educated in real estate was the root cause of that, right? So I'm very, very careful about doing rental comps, doing, you know, comparables to make sure that I'm able to really get that upside. So that's what's my learning on my first house that I supposed to buy. I didn't close, but I lost my earnest money.
Well, tough lesson learned, but you've certainly made up for it. And that is one of the advantages of being nearby, is you can go look at the property, and the comps aren't just numbers on a page or numbers on a website. You can go see, is this the same part of town? Is this the same, you know, character, the neighborhood that you're comparing to? And I think folks buying from out of town can make that mistake a lot of times. It's just a property on a map. What's the difference? It's a, you know, one street one block over, something like that.
Correct. Yeah, no, I think the mistake on that is I didn't understand how a renter would think on when renting a place, right? A 1,000 square foot house, let's say they're getting $1,000 in rent compared to a 600 square foot house compared to 600, right? I mean, I thought somebody who's paying $600 for 600 square feet house is going to pay $1,000 per house. That's what I thought. I'm just, you know, just a linear equation, right? So that was my mistake. I mean, renters don't think like that, right? So you may give them a big house, but they can't pay $1,000. So they probably pay like $700, $750. That's all they can afford, right? So, right. Wow. So that was key learning for me.
Well, you've learned you learned the lesson and are all the better for it. My favorite question here at the end of the show is, what is the most important lesson you've learned in business and investing?
Business and I think add value to others. Try to add as much as value to others, and that's where you build trust. And second is get good mentors. Mentors can really show you the shortcuts, and these are the two things that I think is very key that I've learned throughout this business venture.
Nice. Well, I love it. And James, thank you so much for joining us today. You pointed out some really important things that, you know, folks aren't there talking about. I like the way you've kind of restructured the priority of deal structure in things that investors should look at when evaluating deals. If folks want to reach out, they want to find you, they want to find your book or anything like that, can they track you down?
Yeah, my book, I mean, if you're on YouTube, you can see it, Passive Investing in Commercial Real Estate. We have sold thousands of it. I didn't realize I'm going to sell this chapter for free without paying that handling fee. My website is achieveinvestmentgroup.com. Achieve's like achieving a goal, A-C-H-I-E-V-E, achieveinvestmentgroup.com. My email is james@achieveinvestmentgroup.com. I welcome you guys to connect with me. And I'm in LinkedIn, James Kandasamy, Facebook, James Kandasamy. We have a huge Facebook group as well called Multifamily Investors Group, which is like almost 9,000 people right now. So I'm a lot more active there because, you know, I share a lot of things in that group. And it's very, you know, very focused on adding value to other groups. So these are the few places that you can get hold of me.
Great. Well, James, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. I appreciate that so much. That helps other people learn about the show. That helps us rank higher in the Apple Podcasts ecosystem. And I'm always honest with you guys, that gives me the warm and fuzzies because I get to see that you're engaging with the content and you're escaping the Wall Street casino along with us. If you know anyone who could use a little bit more passive wealth in their lives, please share the show with them and bring them into the tribe. Thank you for tuning in once again. I hope you have a great rest of your day and we'll talk to you on the next one. Bye-bye.